across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
On this Friday morning, July 12th, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin and brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06 on this Friday coming up. Some of our regular Friday guests, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, will talk to longtime Chicago News veteran Mark Jacob about the coverage of President Biden's news conference last night. Dan Schumacher will help us talk about sports as we head toward baseball's All-Star break. And we've got a weekend of weather to talk about with Brittany Merlot joining us as well. We have to ask about her allergies because Rob writes from Tigerton. Good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny and 66. Still battling allergies, and my doctor told me this year is one of the worst years for allergies. Looking forward to finishing up 2 yards today so I can finally sit back in the AC over the weekend. And he again says, I hope three of the best people in morning media have an excellent weekend. How great is that? Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Will you just be like my life coach? Just send me messages, be like, you're killing it, kid. Like, just, I don't know. That's just pure wonderful.
I know. Thank you for that, Rob. Brittany, you sound like you're feeling better, unlike Rob, yeah. Although I know my wife, it seems like the allergies have flared up, but so has the wildfire smoke from Canada. It has definitely made itself known that, hi, Canada, we're back on fire again. Just thought you should know.
I know. Yeah, we're at moderate levels right now for the air quality index as that wildfire smoke is working itself to the surface. This is because the high pressure system, the clear skies, the calm winds, that's why we're having some of that wildfire smoke issues here in the state of Wisconsin. So that is going to continue throughout today. As soon as tomorrow, it does look to push on out of here because we do have systems moving in and temperatures are heating up. It is going to be a steamy weekend when the humidity arrives. As soon as tomorrow, you'll start to feel pretty sticky. And then on Sunday, very hot and humid, and that mugginess is going to linger into Monday as well. And our temperatures are going to be hitting into those mid-80s today. We're going to climb to the upper 80s tomorrow, but remember, it's going to feel sticky, so quite a difference from today to tomorrow. And then on Sunday, into the 90s, especially into the western parts of the state. And then by Monday, the southern parts of the state are really going to be feeling those 90s. So with all of that heat and humidity, it's of course setting up the ring of fire pattern once again. So we are going to see chances of showers and storms all throughout the weekend. And right now we're in a slight risk for some strong to severe storms into northwest Wisconsin Saturday night and into Sunday. We do have a big system that looks to form. I want to say around 6 o'clock it moves in from from Minnesota and pushes into northwest Wisconsin. And then we could see some strong storms with gusty winds, large hail, maybe a tornado or two as well.
That's tonight or tomorrow?
That will be tomorrow night.
That'd be tomorrow night. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought tomorrow night might be the rough one. Couple of questions for you. We talked about this last hour as well. Hot air balloons. Where are you on them? Would you ride in one?
I want to so bad.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Nope. Not at all. The only person with a sense of danger or adventure on this morning show
is me.
Would be Brittany. Yes. So we now have an assignment. We have to get Brittany in a balloon.
I know. And Taste and Glow is right here in Wausau this weekend. So maybe they'll let me up inside one of them.
Well,
just show your media pass. Be like, I'm here. Put me in one.
I'm here. Yeah.
Let's go.
I'm media. I am media.
That looks so fun.
This is National French Fry Day. We mentioned it was Henry David Thoreau's anniversary of his birth. So this is National Simplicity Day because, as he wrote once, as you simplify your life, the laws of the universe will be simpler. Except that Henry David Thoreau never had our to-do lists, which he could not handle this. It's National Etch-a-Sketch Day. It's National Pecan Pie Day, National Motorcycle Day, National Paper Bag Day. Of course, it's still Lasagna Awareness Month. But then finally, today is National Kebab Day, or kebab, if you're familiar with the Flight of the Conchords and the song The Most Beautiful Girl, which is where I turn to the two of you and ask about Flight of the Conchords, which goes back 15 years ago now. But does that ring a bell with you, that comedy troupe?
Let's get out of here. Let's get in a cab. I'll buy you a kebab. Nice.
I've seen them live.
Have you really?
Oh, it was amazing. Oh, Brittany, have you heard of them?
I don't even know what you're talking about. You lost me at Etch a Sketch.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, boy.
Do you enjoy comedy? Right. Do you enjoy comedy?
Yes.
Do you enjoy music?
Do you laugh? Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah.
Do you love music? Good. Do you love comedy? Do you love men from New Zealand?
Sure.
Then I'm going to send you a bunch of Play the Concord clips.
Okay, thank you.
The show is worth it just to see the split second look on her face. Do you like men from New Zealand?
Who sure. does yep. I claim that people from New Zealand are the funniest people on the planet Earth. There's a hierarchy, and they are the top, period. They're the funniest.
I would go, having been to New Zealand, I would go along with that.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous country. You definitely need a sense of humor to live that far isolated from the world, but also in such a beautiful place. So, Brittany, along with getting on a hot air balloon this weekend, I want you looking up Flight of the Conchords and watching... What?
I'm on it, Pat. I'm sending her stuff.
Greg's got it. He'll hook you up with all the links, all that you need.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful weekend with watching New Zealand comedy and flying in hot air balloons, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Oh, it's going to be the best. Have a good one, too.
All right. You bet. 712 right now. And again, as always, if you'd like to reach the show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. Call it, text it, use that Civic Media app. Or like some of folks like Robin Tigerton, put your comments on Facebook or on our YouTube page. However you go about doing it, we would love to hear from you. The Milwaukee Brewers were basically no-hit yesterday against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It wasn't an official no-hitter because the Pittsburgh pitcher, rookie Paul Skeens, who threw it, had a no-hitter through seven, and then he was pulled. He was up to 99 pitches. The score was only 1-0. And the lead held up. Milwaukee was unable to capitalize on Skeens being out of the game. If you're not familiar with the name Paul Skeens, you probably will be before much longer. He was the number one draft pick last year. He's only made 11 major league starts, but his ERA is now below 2. He struck out 11 yesterday with one walk and one hit batter. And in 9 of his 11 starts, he's held the opposing team to 2 runs or fewer. He's got a triple-digit fastball that is simply insane. All of that to say that as the Pirates won 1-0, it wasted a terrific performance by Milwaukee pitcher Aaron Civale, who only surrendered the one run, and he pitched into the 7th inning. Still, the Milwaukee Brewers are your National League Central Division leaders, even though they did just lose for the 5th time in the last 7 games. And by giving up 2 out of 3 games to Pittsburgh, it broke the Brewers' streak of winning 9 home series in a row. There is one home series left before the All-Star break. The Washington Nationals are coming to town today, and Freddie Peralta will get the start for the Brewers. You can catch the pregame at 6:35 on Civic Media stations that include WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, WISS in Oshkosh. First pitch is coming up at 7:10 p.m. Let's unpack some of the news at 7:15. Folks probably have heard by now that President Biden called an impromptu news conference yesterday to address some concerns about his health and the presidential campaign. And he made a couple of verbal mistakes along the way. Again, not the world's biggest surprise for somebody in their 80s, but I wonder if people caught the grasp of the issues that you were hearing from the president instead. You had some minor mistakes while having a firm grasp of the big problems in our country. Contrast that with the incoherent babbling, getting facts wrong, a former president that has no relationships with our allies, only with our adversaries, no grasp of history or the complexities of problem solving. And the double standard that you find in the media that we'll talk about with Mark Jacob coming up in about 15 minutes or so here. As noted, you know, by some folks on social media yesterday, take every one of those questions that was thrown at Joe Biden yesterday, now do Donald Trump, and then compare those answers side by side. And I can't say that sincerely enough. Compare the answers side by side to the exact same question. Now, if you had done that during the debate, we really wouldn't be having these other conversations. If you actually listen to the substance of the answers and, the knowledge of the problem, how those answers were expressed is another matter altogether. One was all full of bluster and division and hatred and lie after lie after lie. And the other one came from an older man who's been, you know, an experienced and seasoned leader. So let's get Donald Trump to answer those questions. Let's get Donald Trump to answer any questions, because as has been noted here, the last time that Donald Trump had what you would call a press conference, not shouted questions in a courtroom hallway, but an actual structured news conference, was February 8th. February 8th, 5 months. Where's all the national media that's calling on Trump to answer questions? Well, they know why. Because you'd get these same incoherent, babbling, factually challenged answers. And so they give him a pass and say, well, why even bother? Because the voters should see the difference. They should see the difference in the answers that President Biden gave yesterday versus the answers that Donald Trump would give. As noted by journalist Tim O'Brien here, for example, Biden last night did not use his news conference to advise Americans to shine a flashlight up their butt or drop nuclear weapons into hurricanes. Biden didn't say he'd like to be dictator for a day or wage any kind of a war on democracy. He didn't say he'd like to date his daughter. He didn't say that he'd be happy if global warming were to continue. Biden didn't say anything yesterday about letting, you know, Russia do whatever the hell it wants with our NATO allies in Europe if he doesn't feel like they wrote a big enough check. Because for President Biden, it's not actually about the dollars and cents so much as it is about right and wrong and keeping the world secure. Instead, you had Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago yesterday. Donald Trump, a private citizen, meeting with the leader of Hungary, who is an ally of Vladimir Putin. You had Putin recently traveling to North Korea. You had Hungary's leader recently traveling to both Russia and China, and now talking to Donald Trump. It's basically, it's FDR and Churchill in Yalta and Potsdam and all those other places, completely in reverse. Those are the choices that, again, need to be put out there for the voters. We'll have more. Jim Santel, Mark Jacob, Dan Schumacher, and more coming up next. You're up north on the Civic Media Radio Network. All right, while we wait to see if Jim Santel will join us on this Friday morning at 7:20 on Up North News Radio, we'll check in on some other headlines as we unpack the news. The bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission on Thursday unanimously approved a set of best practices to ensure the security of unstaffed absentee ballot drop boxes now that the Wisconsin State Supreme Court ruled last week that drop boxes could be brought back for fall elections. The use of drop boxes had never been a partisan issue until Donald Trump lost and was looking, grasping at straws, looking for any excuses. He was making up excuses before Election Day, as we later learned from the Special Congressional Committee investigating January 6th. But because of that, enough of Trump's followers, supporters, sycophants said, yep, that must be it. It must be the drop boxes that are the problem. No, they were not. And so it took until the state Supreme Court was under progressive control, thanks to Wisconsin voters, who clearly understood that there was not a problem. There was no there when it came to drop boxes. A survey by the Associated Press and other state elections officials have revealed no causes of fraud or vandalism or theft, nothing that could have affected the results in 2020. So the best practices that were approved on Thursday by the State Elections Commission will be distributed to the state's 1,800 local officials who administer elections. They detail ways to make the drop boxes and surrounding areas safe, well-lit, accessible to voters. The guidance encourages clerks to empty the drop boxes before they get full. The guidance does not specify that the boxes be emptied on any type of regular interval, but it also says recording when the drop box is emptied, who did it, and how many ballots are retrieved is encouraged. The guidance, as written up here by the Associated Press, also recommends that the drop boxes be clearly marked and that any damage be documented and inspected to ensure the box can be safely used. Clerks were also encouraged to communicate to voters the location of the drop boxes and when the last ballot retrieval date will be. The guidance for the clerks is just that. It's guidance. The best practices are not mandatory. The commission opted not to adopt an emergency rule, which carries the weight of law, and instead issued the guidance to clerks in response to questions that came in the wake of the court's ruling last week. All right, folks are going to be saying, well, wait a minute. Why not put it out as an emergency rule with the weight of law? Why just these guidelines? To which I would come back to what things were like prior to 2020. They were fine. They were good. In many cases, the drop boxes that were added in places also had security cameras somewhere to monitor them. Talking to my own local clerk here up in Chippewa County, there were all manner of best practices that clerks were already engaged in and guidance that had come from state elections officials. Because you need to keep this part in mind. There is no one election czar in Wisconsin. There's no one state election. There are, as you just heard there, 1,800 local elections, each one run by a local official with local, meaning your friends and neighbors, staffing them. And every one of them wanting to do a good job, wanting to do their part for democracy with virtually nothing to blemish that record in terms of any kind of fraud or abuse. These are people who take their citizenship seriously, not the honestly clown-like behavior that alleges that all of these irregularities have happened, must have happened if their guy lost. These are folks who have clearly never been a poll worker or maybe never even talked to a poll worker. To understand the pride that's involved by our friends and neighbors who are administering these elections. And then all of these local results are reported, you know, to the county level, and then the state tabulates them up, and you have an election. So to say that, say, Wisconsin rigged an election somehow, because there's not one central election hub that's done, it would mean you'd have to get an immense chunk of 1,800 different local officials to go in on a conspiracy to cheat somehow. That's not happening. It didn't happen. And again, you have too many people who want to do a good job by their friends and neighbors. Now, drop boxes had been used for years, but of course, the popularity exploded during the COVID-19 pandemic when more than 40% of Wisconsin voters cast mail-in ballots. But, of course, then, you know, Trump started whining, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court in 2022, which was then controlled by conservatives, ruled in favor of a conservative law group that challenged the use of unstaffed drop boxes outside of clerks' offices, like near libraries and other public spaces. Excuse me. The court ruled that drop boxes could only be located at offices, at clerks' offices, staffed by clerks, not at remote, unstaffed locations. But you can return absentee ballots at a mailbox, and mailboxes are everywhere, and they are unstaffed, and yet we consider them to be safe because, again, the protection of the mail carries the force of law. You tamper with a mailbox, you tamper with the mail, you are going to be in some trouble. That part is known. That part is well documented. So if mailboxes are safe and are credible, then certainly drop boxes are as well. That's what the case was before 2020, and that's what's going to be the case now. Once the state Supreme Court flipped to progressive control last year, liberal groups brought a new challenge, and the court last week overturned that 2022 ruling and again allowed drop boxes to be used starting with this August 13th election, which again is oftentimes just kind of a primary election in places like the 3rd Congressional District and in some legislative districts where you've got multiple candidates and you've got to winnow them down to figure out who is going to be the one candidate representing Democrats or Republicans on the November ballot. But there is also now this statewide issue to pass along on proposed amendments to the state constitution that would, if passed, allow the Republican-controlled legislature to basically interfere with the dispersal of federal aid to Wisconsin. Is that something that Republican legislators are likely to do? Yeah, because we're marking the one-year anniversary this past week of the Republicans in the legislature sitting on more than $200 million for various projects that they themselves approved. They approved the state budget 1 year ago. But for a year, they've been sitting on funds for cleaning up drinking water, for literacy programs, for health care, for child care assistance, because of some political games they're playing with Governor Tony Evers. Not to mention the fact that they've consistently sat on multi-billion dollar surpluses and not put them to work, hoping instead that they could get a Republican governor in who would then help them turn those surpluses into tax cuts geared toward the very wealthy. So their track record is clear, and they would sit on more money designed for Wisconsinites if these constitutional amendments were to pass. If you want more information on the August 13th election, head to myvote.wi.gov. Mark Jacob joins us next. You're up north.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has...
All right, our little bit of Friday Yacht Rock continues there with Firefall on this Friday morning on Up North News Radio, 7:34. And it's time for us to cover the coverage. There was a news conference by President Joe Biden yesterday meant to address some concerns about his health and his efforts at re-election. We've seen some of the coverage of it. Let's cover the coverage with our friend Mark Jacob, formerly of the Chicago Tribune and author of the Stop the Presses newsletter. Mark, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
All right. So first off came the... I don't want to call it an impromptu news conference, but it wasn't one that was, you know, where we're notified like, you know, 24 hours ahead of time. It was relatively short notice of a news conference. What were your overall impressions of the president, not just his performance that everybody's, you know, been watching more closely lately, but the substance of the remarks?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, he's not 25 or 30 or 35. He's, you know, and so he comes across like an old man because he is, but he comes across as an old man who knows a whole lot about foreign policy. I mean, as I was watching it, I was thinking, can you imagine having Trump on that stage and asking him all those questions? Can you imagine him trying to explain what the munitions strategy was in Europe as far as supplying Ukraine? Can you imagine that happening? I don't think so. So I thought he came across really well there. Obviously, he made a flub or two yesterday. It seems like it's a continuing issue that people are not going to... I don't think we moved the ball one way or another yesterday as far as whether Biden's staying or going. And, you know, my attitude about that is, you know, the Democrats are going to figure it out sooner or later, and, you know, he'll stay or he'll go. Either him staying or him going is far superior to Trump winning. So I've just decided to put my emotional investment in making sure people understand that Trump is an incredible danger to our country.
Well, look, you put it very well on Twitter just this morning, where you say it's okay if people think Biden should step aside. It's okay if people think Biden should stay in the race. What's not okay is giving Trump a pass while wrangling over the issue. Focus on the real threat, Trump, while Democrats figure things out, which leads me to this point. I'm not saying the questions asked of the president yesterday were the same that were asked in the debate, But again, when it was just Biden, you could focus somewhat on the performance,
right,
but also on the substance of it.
Right.
And that's what was missing from the debate coverage, was it was all about Biden's poor performance, admittedly poor performance, but so very little coverage on the substance. Trump was answering some of the same questions, but he was not answering them. He wasn't close to answering them.
You know, what got me in the debate thing, I went back and read it. You know, you had this idea that, you know, that you ask Trump a question about childcare and you get all this kind of crazy gobbledygook, and he never even mentions the words childcare. And then you get a thank you, Mr. President, from Jake Tapper. You know, so there was that. I will have to credit the news media for asking good questions yesterday. I think that, you know, they asked specific questions. I mean, there was a good NATO focus on it because the NATO meeting just ended, and they asked him smart questions about important things, and he discussed it like he knows what he's talking about. I mean, it, you know, how many times is Biden going to answer the question of, you know, does he feel like he's, you know, his health will allow him to stay in the job? Obviously, he does think that. That seems like kind of a tired question, but their substance questions were substantial, you know, and you got good answers. It was a grown up press conference, Pat, you know, which is, we're not getting much grown up policy oriented stuff in this campaign. So I felt it was kind of refreshing.
Let's talk ever so briefly about the New York Times, because I don't always want to make it all about them. But, you know, the folks on their editorial board who thought Biden should go are at least now also mentioning that Trump is unfit for office. But it almost seems like they're doing that as, you know, a little bit of CYA, as we like to call it. And it still doesn't feel like they're really coming at this race from an honest broker's standpoint of weighing the substance more than their hurt feelings that Biden won't grant them an interview.
Yeah, it is. I feel like their whole behavior, and it's been terrible. And in some ways, you know, I hate having to bash the New York Times all the time, but boy, do they deserve bashing. And they are like the leading newspaper in the country, so it's not crazy to focus on them. I feel like that they've done a lot of things wrong. They've been really disappointing, more so than the Washington Post or almost any other news source. I think the New York Times has been an enormous disappointment. Their executives keep on coming out and saying that they don't really think that democracy is the big issue this year, which is totally wrong. And their editorials, yeah, they seem, it's like they want to throw their weight around, and they feel like they want to go after Biden and the Democrats because they think they can have influence there, and they know that they're, no matter what they say about Trump, it's not going to change his behavior. But they still need to say those things. They still need to make it clear that Trump is a danger. And Pat, I'm not as concerned with the editorial side of the New York Times as the supposedly straight news side. And their treatment of Trump has been terrible, because they keep on kind of reporting on him as if he's kind of some sort of human interest story, that it's just kind of, well, here's the interest, here's the funny thing he said today, or here's the, they're not getting serious about him. I mean, they belatedly wrote a story about his whacked out speech on Tuesday, and they mentioned briefly, but they're like talking about how happy he was about the problems in the Democratic Party, they seem to be covering it as a feature story, not a news story. I mean, I'll harken back to when Trump was on trial, his company was on trial for fraud in New York, and the New York Times wrote a page one story about the fashion choices of the Trump family when they went to court. I mean, that's what the page one story was. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that they're into this kind of storytelling and, oh, isn't this an interesting narrative, instead of, holy crap, people, pay attention. This guy is scary as hell. That's what they should. That's what the tone of the coverage should be.
Again, the substance of what he's talking about, the substance of each issue, which takes me to the economy and the substance of that. Because again, you had tremendous numbers this week when it comes to inflation, when it comes to job growth, and when it comes to the stock markets. And I don't know what it is. This one is not just about Trump. It just seems like during Republican administrations, we're all the time hearing, you know, when Wall Street does well, or if Wall Street doesn't do well, that Wall Street is concerned. And it just seems far too often with, you know, Democratic presidencies, it's like it's an afterthought. And so what is demonstrably good news about the economy is so far underreported compared to the vibe of the economy. And the vibe of the economy is basically manipulated by Republicans trash talking the economy for political gain, it seems.
Right, right. And, you know, in the Fox News, you know, inflation is skyrocketing. No, actually, Pat, inflation prices went down last month. And not only that, but wage growth has outpaced inflation for the last year, which means that even though inflation has been going up a little bit, wages have been going up faster. So, and I won't just fault the news media for this. I think the Democrats have done a terrible job of highlighting these things. And part of the reason that that a lot of people think, well, boy, Trump sure had a great economy when he was president, is because he said it all the time. And I mean, see, over and over and over, and said it again. But and Democrats, I feel like they don't talk about that enough. They don't talk. They don't. You know, they're not braggarts about it. And you almost have to be. You know, and you're gonna in this the convention that's coming up, you're going to hear a lot of lies, like, you know, you're going to hear, oh, there's a struggling economy and skyrocketing inflation and skyrocketing crime and all that. They're all lies. That's it. I mean, the stats are good. This has been a good presidency. No matter whether you want Joe Biden to stay or go, he's overperformed. I mean, it's been a pretty impressive presidency.
I really can't say enough in agreement with you on what you said a moment ago about Democrats and the Biden campaign and the Biden White House also not doing enough to talk up their economic and business record. My question put it all on the media, but I think far too many progressives, they think, well, we're supposed to be, you know, either anti-business or hostile to business, so we can't be seen praising Wall Street numbers when, you know, it's actually supposed to be a little bit of both. You actually want businesses to succeed. You want capitalism to succeed, but it seems like, you know, Democrats are the ones who are guarding against the excesses of capitalism, the abuse of consumers, the abuse of employers, the abuse of the environment. That doesn't mean you can't root for good economic news when you honestly have a good economic recovery. And Democrats, progressives, media types would do well to learn those lessons.
Yeah, oh, I totally agree with you on that. You know, a lot of people have 401ks that are tied to the stock market. It's not like the stock market is irrelevant. I mean, it's not a perfect indicator of how people are doing. And it's really important for Democrats and progressives to remember the poor people and to remember that we really need to do something to bring everyone up. So that needs to be stated, but everyone should be rooting for the economy overall to do well. You know, I think it's a good thing if people get rich. I mean, I'm for it. But as long as everyone gets taken care of in one way or another. And so I think the messaging has been not aggressive and not as focused as it should be. If they just listen to what you just said, I think they'd be much better off.
Thank you. Let me again just read one of your tweets verbatim here and then have you pick up on it because it deals with your latest Media Misses video with Stephen Beschloss. And it says it so clearly. If you, talking to the media, dear media, if your reporting on Trump's VP pick, which, you know, could come as early as today, if you're reporting on Trump's VP pick and you're not emphasizing that Trump incited a mob that wanted to hang the last guy in that job, you're really missing the point. And I couldn't agree more that any coverage of Trump's VP pick that does not talk about Mike Pence not supporting him and everything else is, it's journalistic malpractice. It just is.
Yeah, it is. And the media just loves the horse race and they love to, you know, the competition and the suspense. And so they gravitate toward, you know, what are the strong points? What are the weak points? Who's in the driver's seat here? Stuff like that. It's just kind of horse race stuff. But the context is super important here. The guy who ran with him for vice president last time and who was vice president won't have anything to do with him because he incited a mob to chant "Hang Mike Pence" and bring a gallows outside the Capitol. I mean, that's a context that it's not just, oh, by the way, that just looms over the whole story. You know, and Pat, I wanted to say one more thing about that. Not only will Pence have nothing to do with Trump, Trump's wife will have hardly anything to do with him. And that would be, if this was by the Bidens and Joe Biden wouldn't go out and campaign with Biden, they'd be writing it all over the place. But it's just baked in so the media is bored with it. You know, the fact that she won't have anything to do with him in public.
It's interesting. I'm glad you said that, because there have been not rumor stories, but, you know, kind of that is Jill Biden being too protective of Joe Biden. Look, again, if you're going to write that story and you haven't said a thing about Melania Trump not showing up at court, you know, or at campaign rallies or anything else, again, you're making an incredible mistake. Last point I want to make, and you repost this from our friend Jennifer Schulze, about, again, what they're going to say at the convention next week versus what Republicans would actually do. So when Republicans say, well, we're actually backing away from a national abortion ban, it's only because they have found a backdoor way into these things that journalists are going to have to do a better job reporting.
Right. This idea, this just blows my mind that someone's going to try to depict Trump as a moderate on abortion. I mean, if you're in the media and you're reporting that story, you're being taken for a fool. And I mean, are you referring to the Comstock Act stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, well, that people.
And then fetal personhood as well.
Right. You know? Those are two different ways you could ban abortion, virtually ban it or ban it completely nationwide without ever passing. You know, I mean, the Comstock Act thing is on the books. So you don't even have to pass anything in Congress. You just need to enforce an antiquated law that nobody's enforced for a very long time. And so the Republicans are running a scam here. This, like, the idea that they, you know, well, we were moderating, we're softening. And that's the word they use in the headlines. We're softening on abortion. And the media went for it. The New York Times, Washington Post both had soften in their headline. And that's not what's happening here. They're just trying to make it more palatable to people so they can fool them.
Yeah, the Project 2025 stuff is real, and it's a map, and nobody's saying that every one of those things are going to happen, but there's something in there that could impact your life that you should be looking into. Mark Jacob, as always, thank you. Get his Stop the Presses newsletter. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you later.
All right, Dan Schumacher's coming up next. You're up north. All right, Dan Schumacher's here, and fellow Deadhead Greg Bach as well. What do we got this morning for our little musical welcome?
Little Mississippi half-step, Hootaloo.
There it is.
Hootaloo?
Yeah.
That's just the lyric. That's Mississippi half-step.
I was not aware there was going to be a spelling bee as part of this. Okay.
And the S is there.
All right. Brewers start a 3-game series against the Washington Nationals heading into the All-Star break. Pre-game at 6:35. On Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. First pitch, 7:10. Dan, I know you were on the water yesterday, and why wouldn't you be? It was a gorgeous day to be on Lake Wissota, to be on the Chippewa River. Some of us who were doing a little bit of work, and we had the Brewers on. They were on yesterday afternoon, and we'd look over, and we'd look over, and we'd look over, and we're like, we are getting no hit. We are getting no hit. Not the biggest surprise, because this kid, Paul Skeens, I mean, yeah. He's for real. I mean, he no-hit the Brewers through 7, and then they pulled him. The score was 1-0 at that point. And if this were a Craig Council thing, we would dissect this 8 ways to Sunday. But in this case, the Pittsburgh manager said, you know, you're all good. And I didn't hear anybody grousing afterwards. So we can all second guess it. But to me, the larger story is this guy is that good, and the Brewer bats had no answer for it.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool game to watch, actually. Mm-hmm. He reminded me a little bit of a Greg Maddux, who could place the ball anywhere he wanted.
Okay.
You know, place the ball. You know, he doesn't throw the hardest. He doesn't throw the 98-mile-an-hour fastball, but he knows he places his pitches in the right spots. So that was an impressive debut outing for him. But the Cubs swept. The Orioles.
That's so great. Moving on. So we're just going
to. To me, the better story of today, as I was reading, doing some training camp, is 2 weeks away.
Oh, football
season is 2 weeks away.
My goodness.
Yep. That, and somebody had up a social media post that the first games of the season for the college teams are like 50 days and counting until the first. So it's out there. So yeah, one moment we're talking about it being in the 90s today, and the other we're like, hey, football season's going to be here.
Oh, right, exactly. So
we've always got. It could be that you know some folks don't want to talk about where their team is in the standings right now, but you know, I understand if you look if my well, oh wait, breaking news: the Cubs are not in last place currently. They're tied for last place with the Cincinnati Reds.
Things are looking up.
Things are definitely looking up. Looking up at the Pirates and the Cardinals and the Brewers as well. What do the Cubs have for All-Stars this year?
Anything? You know what? I don't know. Actually, I don't know. I don't even know how many they even have.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. You'd have to look that one up, Pat. I wasn't paying attention to that, getting ready for All-Star break.
Dan, see, here's the thing about that question is Pat asked it with tone. You answered it with earnest, and he was like, mm-hmm, uh-huh, uh-huh.
No, I'm not going to blame him for not knowing. Right. I'm actually trying to look it up very quickly myself here, and I have to keep scrolling and scrolling to see if there's something there. Because look, last year the Brewers had nobody. Corbin Burnes was there, but he never got put into the game. He was in the he was in the bullpen the whole time here. So you know you're gonna have years like that. Whereas we've got a couple of players in the
game. When is the All-Star game?
Because Tuesday in Arlington, Texas.
I was going to say, isn't it usually around the 4th of July?
No, it's always a couple, like 2 weeks after the 4th of July or 10 days or so. So the Cubs have all of one player in the All-Star game here. Left-handed pitcher Shota Imanaga.
Oh, that guy.
Good.
That guy.
He's good.
He has made the, it says here on MLB.com, he has made an effortless transition from Japanese professional baseball, owning a 0.84 ERA through his first nine starts. It has risen to 3.16, but he has been one of the National League's most effective starters and has become an anchor of the Cubs rotation. So you got that going for you, which is nice.
Plus, he can hit the ball. Man, he can hit the ball. I seen him hit a home run the other day. It was unbelievable. So
really,
yeah, he's an all around ball player. So pretty good player. Pretty good player. A lot of money though. A lot of money.
There's no doubt about that. Do you watch the home run derby as part of the All Star game as well? Or, I mean, for me, it's kind of lost a little of its luster, but. I'm not going to say don't do it. I don't watch it as intently as say when Prince Fielder was knocking him out all the time.
I would say the last time I watched the home run derby, it was when McGuire and Sosa were doing it.
Oh well, now we're kicking it old school here.
It's a long time ago, but it was always fun because that was a great season that year. At the same time, because they were both battling for the home run record, so when they put them both in that home run derby, it generated a lot of excitement at the All-Star.
I think it was like 99.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wow. Probably was. That's how old I am.
You know,
but I don't really watch. I haven't watched the home run derby in a long time.
Yeah,
you know,
It's one of those where if I'm home and I've got you know the TV there, but it's not necessarily you know shall we say appointment viewing. You know, but no. Well, as we talk about getting into kind of the preparations for football season. We had Riley Kleist on the show a few weeks back. He's one of the like assistant coaches at UW Stout, talking about what summertime is like when you're getting you know ready to prepare for football season. You've got recruits visiting, you've got freshmen who are coming in. You know there really is like no end to the preparation. And in your case, up at Northland College, you're looking at the potential to get a football team going. Yep. So again, we're talking year-round activity for a sport like that.
It is, and almost every sport is like that, Pat. Now, I mean, it doesn't stop. And you know, like yesterday, I know my coach was excited to gain a transfer for volleyball. So the recruiting is going on all summer long for all sports. You know, you got my hockey coaches that are on the road for watching AAU tournaments, softball AAU tournaments all over the country. So it really doesn't stop. All the coaches, no matter what sport you are, basketball coaches are putting on summer camps and what they call a prospect camps. And inviting high school kids to play in pickup games and stuff like that for evaluation. So recruiting just doesn't go by a short off season. It's a full year round job. It never stops.
Which would explain why a man in your position, when you get the chance to get on the river, will get on the river. And I sense you'll be back there again today, given that there's chances of thunderstorms for Saturday and Sunday.
Yes, I did see that. I thought that, you know, it's kind of like bait and switch. I swear to God, all week long, it's going to be beautiful all day. Every day, there's going to be an unbelievable weekend, and all of a sudden, now they're switching the tunes.
Don't dump on the weather, people. Stick to the question. You will be
it's
on the water
today.
It's the
only job in America. It's the only job in America that you can be consistently wrong and still keep your job.
Okay, we're going to have a cage match with Brittany Merlot coming up one of these mornings at 7:07. Yeah. Mr. Schumacher, thank you. I probably will see you on the water.
You probably will.
All right, and you'll see Greg Bach with Matt and Air on Air at 10 o'clock. Thanks, Greg. Have a great weekend. Thanks to all of you for being part of the festivities as well. Follow what we do at UpNorthNewsWI.com. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great weekend.